I am Ken Tangen. This is episode 15 of What's It Like? My guest is Darren Kitchen. Most people know him as a technology guru, Today in Technology, and of course, hack5.org. That's H-A-K-5. Apparently, he couldn't afford the C. What? Hey, Darren.
Hey, how are you?
I'm good. What happens if I go to hack5.com?
You just go to some spammers page. I haven't gotten around to getting that back from them. To be honest, when I first registered the domain, I went with a .org because it was like a dollar cheaper and I didn't really want to spend any money on this hacking podcast project. Where was that going to go?
That's funny. With a name like Darren Kitchen, I would have thought that you were British.
Really?
Yeah.
No, you know, I haven't met any other kitchens in the U.S., yeah. So...
And you say tally-ho and all that kind of stuff.
So well, I could say tally-ho and cheerio and all of that.
But you grew up in Virginia.
Yeah, well, for the most part, I grew up in Virginia. I mean, I was born in Florida, but I spent, you know, most of my years from, like, second grade on in Virginia up until just recently moving out to the SF Bay Area.
SF San Francisco?
Yes.
Okay. Just check.
I've started to learn to like abbreviate everything. These Northern Californian people they don't even say totally; they say totes. Yes. Most definitely is most definite. I don't know. I'm getting into it, I guess.
Well, apparently, you have to pay per word or per letter,
and that's why hack5.org is without.
Well, see, yes, it's very SF. But growing up in Virginia and your family, did you have a particular philosophy or religious background or anything?
Well, we were Lutheran, and I went to church most Sundays, back then. And my family was pretty easygoing. My mom was totally just like the safety net, and this her idea was just to give us a lot of freedom to really do whatever we wanted, but also like, you know, be kind of like our best friend so that we could talk to her about stuff. So I remember the first time I smoked pot or just really anything, like getting in trouble. Like she's the first person like I'd go to and tell and talk to her about things because she was so accessible in that manner, because she was all about, you know, just, you know, be yourself. You're going to do these things anyway. And while I'm here, while I'm, you know, your mother and you're living in my house, you know, let me be that safety net. And that was really cool growing up to have that.
A lot of people get, as long as you're living in my house and under my roof, you will not do these things.
Exactly. And I know those, you know, I had those friends, and then their first semester in college, they went crazy because they never had that opportunity. And then they dropped out and it, you know, was no, or they got, you know, really, really involved in, you know, alcohol or drugs or something. And it's like kind of a missed opportunity for parents to realize that, like, you're there at the age of 15. There's no reason why any kids shouldn't be like having a glass of wine with dinner. And that's just how it was at my house. It was kind of very European in that sense. Tying back to the whole kitchen thing. So, you know, it was nice to just have that freedom because I also had that safety net there.
Mm-hmm. And was your dad involved?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. My dad departed when I was about two, so I don't remember that. But he came back into our lives when I was in middle school. So I think I was about 11 years old, and he came back into our lives and lived with us through the whole family era in Virginia, and it was great because, you know, we reunited basically, and immediately he took me on something I'll never forget, an epic road trip across the United States, and took me to see the Grand Canyon and Devil's Tower and all of this, you know, beautiful Midwest stuff, and it's something that, you know, it will always be near and dear to my heart. Like when I did the Hack Across America trip, when I sold all of my belongings and packed up a motorcycle and drove, you know, spent a month driving across the country west when I moved here to San Francisco a few months ago, it was like revisiting that childhood adventure with him.
Mm-hmm. So what was it like for him to be gone and then come back?
Well, I mean, I had a different dad then, my stepdad then, and it was no different. I mean, I didn't really think about it as like, you know, he was my dad, right? And it's like, and then, you know, my mom tagged explaining, well, he's your dad, but then you also have this other dad that's your biological dad. And I was like, all right, well, whatever, you know, six, one, half a dozen. They both treat me like I'm their son. So, yeah, it's no bigs.
So you got the advantage from your point of view of having two dads?
Yeah, that's what, you know, exactly how it was. And, you know, she explained, like, I was once had explained to me how, you know, my brother was actually, you know, my half brother. And I'm like, well, makes no difference to me. Mm-hmm. You know,
when you were growing up, did you, with a name like Kitchen, did you have a nickname that you were taunted with?
No, absolutely not. You know, I've heard some things like, what's cooking? You know, but honestly, I never got, you know, taunted for my name whatsoever.
Wow, you grew up in a nice place.
Yeah, it was a great. Well, Williamsburg, Virginia is a wonderful community. It's a great place to raise kids. And, you know, I'm thankful now looking back at like how originally I was just like, oh, I'm so bored. There's nothing to do in this town or whatever. But to be honest, it's a great place. And I think I stayed there for just the right amount of time.
Mm-hmm. Now, I don't know much about the geography. I know it's sort of close to Richmond, but toward the Hamptons?
Sure. It's actually in Hampton Roads. So it's south, about an hour south of Richmond, the capital of Virginia. And it's right there sandwiched in between the York River and the James River. So it's part of what they call the historic triangle between Yorktown and Jamestown, where the, you know, the battlefields are, where we, you know, kicked the British ass. And Williamsburg, it's, you know, that's where like the palace was. And, you know, it's really colonial downtown. And it's just a big tourist town, but it's lots of fun.
Actually, the Hampton is not the same as the Hamptons, is it?
No, not at all.
Yeah. Yeah. Just a few hundred miles difference between them.
Exactly.
Well, what was your major challenge in school?
Just staying on track. I mean, I once sat in front of the expulsion board for creating an underground newsletter and finding out the hard way that while you have freedom of speech everywhere else, while you're actually on school grounds, you have no rights as an individual.
Yes.
Quite interesting. I had no idea. I mean, I had no trouble with any of the actual coursework. It was really just, you know, kind of getting bored with the material and kind of going off and doing my own thing that I'd sometimes get in trouble.
One of the problems with being bright.
Yeah, you know, and I was recently rereading the Hacker's Manifesto, and I think there was a line in there that really resonated, something about just how the kids are, you know, bored with the like tasteless pre-chewed meat that's served up there, you know, education wise. And it's because, you know, I understand when you've got a room full of 30 kids and they're all at different levels, you've got to teach to the lowest common, but it's kind of a shame.
Best part of school?
Oh, best part of school whatsoever was like high school. I had a fantastic time there because I went to Lafayette High School in Williamsburg, Virginia, which was kind of like a charter school or one of these schools that had like special programs. So for instance, not only do we have your typical like, you know, engineering classes where you would learn how to, you know, draw the stuff on like graph paper and you know, it was kind of like shop, but techie shop. We also had like AutoCAD. And then from there, we even had like 3D Studio, where you would do like 3D modeling with the same kind of software that they were using at Pixar.
Yeah, fancy.
Yeah, took that twice, once with the DOS version, once with the Windows version, and even convinced the counselor to give me credit for both because they were different versions instead of just auditing the class. And then we'd have like architectural engineering, where we were using some new Autodesk software that was actually in beta at the time. That was great because part of the class was not only to build a building, but to submit bug reports. And then, you know, web development. And even at the time when I was there, they were trying out a new class where, I forget what it was called, but it was a computer repair class, where they were teaching us and getting us certified for A+ certification. So our school was really on the cutting edge with technology. And I was, you know, just very fortunate to have that opportunity because, you know, that's just awesome stuff to play with 3D modeling when you're that age.
Yeah. Now that you've survived childhood, what constitutes family for you?
Well, my sister lives in Louisiana right now. By the time this airs, she'll have moved to Tokyo. My brother is just about to start boot camp in the She's in the Air Force. That's why she's moving to Tokyo. My brother is just about to start boot camp with the Marines, so I won't be seeing him for a while. He's back on the East Coast in Virginia. And
do you have wife, kids, dogs, cats?
No, I don't have anything like that, no.
One of the questions I typically ask is, what's it like to fall in love?
Well, I mean, it's a thrilling experience. Having been through it myself, I like welcome it, knowing that there's, you know, the quite the opposite on the other end of it, but that is having your heart broken. But that's just, you know, the price you pay. And I welcome having my heart broken, just because it can't get broken unless, you know, you have this wonderful experience first. So
how often do you fall in love?
Well, I don't know if there's really a frequency involved. I mean, it's never something that, like, I plan. It just kind of, like, happens. And sometimes it works out, and most times it doesn't. But then there's also, you know, like, your love of technology, like what we talk about on Hack 5, like trusting your techno lust, if you will. Totally non-sexual. I'm just talking about, like, you know, when I was, like, young and first falling in love with technology, and then now, like, you know, every now and then things will get mundane, and then I'll find something new that I really fall in love with the stuff again. Like when I, you know, converted over to Linux, for example. So, I mean, there's a good, you know, example. Can't get your heart broken there. You just have to figure out those, you know, repositories and dependencies.
All right, I'll let you off the hook.
Thanks.
So after high school, how did you get to where you are now?
My father was a photographer. He had a photo studio in Florida, and he was also served in Korea as a war photographer, and even in World War II, until he got as far as Liverpool. He was in the army, one of the paratrooper guys, jumped out of airplanes, but eventually they found out that he was 17 and shipped him back. But I guess the thing to do back in, you know, 43 or whatever was to sign up. But
and I appreciate his signing up. My parents were prisoners of war in World War II.
So. Absolutely. I think it's so honorable what he did. They taught him to just keep shooting film, that is. And he told me that a lot of times they wouldn't give him bullets. They would tell him, no, use your bayonet, just keep shooting, like shooting the film. You know, when they get down to the trenches far enough, use your bayonet. And it's so that was, and he had some interesting photographic war stories that I just hope to never have to experience that, to be honest. But I learned so much about photography from him because he was so much like me as a geek. If he was around in this era, I'm sure he'd be just like me with the computers and whatnot. So I learned so much about the behind-the-camera stuff from him. My mother was a ballroom dance instructor. She had spent her 20s on cruise ships touring the world, ballroom dancing for people, and then later owned her own studio in Florida. You can kind of figure out how they got together. And taught ballroom dance there. And then in Williamsburg, Virginia, taught the ballroom dance club at the College of William & Mary, second oldest only to Harvard. And that was really cool growing up to have that, have a dad that could, you know, teach you photography and have a mom that would, you know, teach you ballroom dancing. And I guess I'll also say throughout high school, that was also kind of a perk to, you know, know how to dance.
An extra skill.
Yeah. I had a couple of dance partners. That was, you know, a lot of fun because mom would, you know, give us private lessons. And that was great. I truly miss that. And so I learned a lot of what I know about performing through what I learned from my mom about dancing. I mean, not only would she take me dancing, but we'd go crash wedding receptions to go dance and stuff. So I learned a lot about her from about, like, walking in a place like you own the place, like, you know, not just social engineering, but that whole confidence and that whole on-screen presence. She made it a big deal that I take public speaking because her mom made it a big deal that she take public speaking. She was very articulate and had such grace with the way that she carried herself. And I felt like that I needed to take that energy and put it somewhere positive. And I felt like I had these things in me, this urge to do like what I was, you know, taught from my parents. So I was like, well, I'm passionate about computers. I'm passionate about hacking. I've gotten myself in a lot of trouble when I was young with that stuff. And my mom was always understanding when the feds would come to the house and stuff like that. So
the feds came to the house.
May have gotten in a little trouble with the phone company once or twice, but
learning to dial for dollars. Were
I was having a lot of fun dialing, and they weren't all my phone numbers I was dialing from. But
what a shock!
Yeah, but I want to make my parents proud. And that's pretty much what I think about every time I make an episode or do most of the things I do in life. I always have this great sense of conscience when I'm like, would my mom really approve of this? You know, and it's never guided me wrong.
They're both quite creative.
They were so creative. I was so lucky to grow up in a household that fostered that kind of creativity. And I feel like I'm doing them right by doing what I'm doing now. So it's what's given me, you know, the passion to, you know, to put that into my outlet that is my show. And yeah, I'm really proud of it.
Mm-hmm. Parents teach us a lot of constructs, things that we use to create our world, our view of ourselves and the world around us. What did your parents teach you?
So much. I mean, like I was just telling you about my my dad teaching me about photography, or my mom about performing and dancing. You know, my mom kind of taught me how to party. You know, she taught me how to live life to its fullest and to live life like there's no tomorrow and to seize the day. That was really her message. You know, don't wait for permission. Just, you know, take the opportunity. And my dad was, you know, just taught me just a sense of adventure and what was possible, you know, and that you know, I can achieve anything, and I just have to do it. And yeah, so those were like the two most resonating messages from them. Mm-hmm.
After high school, you went on for more education?
I had plans to, you know, do like most and do 2 years of community and then 2 years at a university. I have a college tuition plan that they started for me when I was like 2 years old, and it had vested. So I was using that to go to community college. I was also unofficially going to the College of William & Mary and VCU. It turns out all you need is a backpack, and then you show up in the morning in front of the wherever the kids are gathering, and you find the group of kids standing around waiting for a door to open. Look for the group with the cutest girls, and then just get in that group. And they don't take roll, you know. So 1 week you may be, you know, learning some business law stuff, and it might be boring. Or the next week you could be learning about astronomy, and that could be really cool. So that's one of the things that I had fun doing. I learned some, you know, picked up some skills about video editing there, which I may have used later.
Well, education's never lost.
Absolutely.
Are you still a PC guy?
Oh yeah, for sure.
So the new iPad has no charm for you?
It seems like an incremental update. If I didn't already have an iPod or iPad, I'd maybe consider this one if I was interested in a tablet and iOS meet my needs. But, you know, otherwise I'm not chomping at the bits to go out and replace my current one.
With all of your toys to play with, what's the best part of your job?
There are so many opportunities, like, seriously, there are, you know, thousands in the spreadsheets that I, you know, the Google documents I keep to keep up with all of the segments and opportunities and Gmail labels and filters and stuff. It's hard to pick just one thing, but one of the most rewarding things is all of the people that we get to meet and all of the conferences that we get to go to and the travel we get to do. And there's a real sense of accomplishment when you do a show that you know is a great show. And I mean, I've even been known to every now and then actually watch an episode, like after it's editing, you know, because I mean, you see it in editing over and over and over. But
yes. So is Hack 5 your major job?
It is. I guess you could consider it my primary job right now. I also still do part-time work for a company back east. And I also do some IT consulting here in the Bay Area. And then I do some other podcasts, notably on Twit. So, yeah, but I consider Hack 5 my main gig right now. Very happy to say that, too.
Hack 5 has both articles and videos. How often do you do an episode?
It's a weekly show. Mm-hmm. So once a week, it's a 30 to 40 minute video show with multiple segments. It's kind of a tech variety show. And I've tried to keep that format over the course of the 5 years.
How much time does it take to put together something like that?
Well, I could slack off and toss it together at the last minute in a day, which I've done maybe a couple of times, and it really shows. But for the most part, the more you put in, the more you get out. The average week is, you know, at least 40 hours, sometimes 60 and plus. But
just to come up with one show.
But to come up with a good show, and also to follow up on all of these different leads. And you know, it turns out there's a lot more than just, I mean, if all I had to do was research segments and perform on them on the show, that would be great. But up until just recently, like really recently, I was doing all of the editing for I've edited 140 episodes of the show. You know, I was managing the store up until I moved. I'm still following up on all the business development stuff, and it's just, there's a lot to it. It's not, and a lot of it isn't stuff that I want to be doing. I don't want to write 1099 miscellaneouses. Who wants to do that? You know, but yeah, it takes forever.
So give me an idea of your typical schedule. If you're doing an episode a week, how much time does it take you? You film the episodes typically now, what, on Wednesday?
We're settling on a schedule of shooting on Wednesday, and it will air the following Wednesday. It puts us a week behind, but it gives our editor 6 days to edit. That also gives us plenty of time to be, you know, doing research and development on the next week's show. Previously, we used to shoot in Virginia. I think it was on like we'd shoot Friday night, and then it would edit and deliver on Monday.
Wow, that's a fast turnaround.
Yeah, it never takes more than a day to edit. But it definitely takes a lot of time and research, because every week we're expected to come up with new material. And after the first 3 years, I ran out of what I knew. So I had to start learning new stuff. And then it went weekly. So every single week it's like having a term paper due. It's like I'm constantly learning new things. And you don't just have to you have to do more than just like read a tutorial and regurgitate it. You have to fundamentally understand what it is that you're doing and why it's working the way it's working. So I'll spend hours working on a project. And then the best ones that get the best feedback, are the ones where I come up with something original, where I take, you know, some pieces here and there that I've learned and I kind of mash them up in a new way that I haven't seen before. But those, you know, just the development on them, it can really suck when you spent so much time and then all of a sudden it's like comes to the last bit where you're like, all right, great. And you hit compile and then you get errors and you're like, you know, it's 11 p.m. and you've got to shoot the next morning and it's not working. And, you know, that can be frustrating.
When you do your shooting, do you have to keep track of all of the audio and video stuff, or do you have people who will do that for you?
Now I do. I have shot the show in many different ways. I've shot the show just myself, with myself shooting it and editing it. I've shot, you know, with a team of people, like back in Virginia. I used to edit there too, or when we were shooting live to tape, which was when we had a HD video mixer, and then Paul would switch all the cameras live, and then, you know, we'd throw in graphics in post-production. But for the most part, the show was done. But now Paul has rejoined the show. He's been with us since season one. He was actually one of the first people to even know about the project before the pilot. And he was initially quite skeptical about it, but he's been with the project from day one. And when I moved, he was a roommate of mine actually at the Hack House in Virginia where we used to do the show. And it was kind of a crazy place too, because it was the four of us, myself, Matt, Shannon, and Paul, all living together in this house that I bought, where we had our rooms upstairs. And then in the downstairs, we had converted the living room and dining room into a studio. So it, and then we had like live camera, like webcams, like two webcams streaming 24/7. And then we'd have like a giant LCD screen on the wall that would scroll IRC or the chat program with like giant font. And so we could talk to viewers that were like watching our lives, and we'd be shooting on a weekly basis and then living upstairs. It was totally the real world or Big Brother. And Paul was one of those guys that was there. So when I moved to San Francisco, it was really kind of a heartbreaking thing, because I was like, Paul, I need to pursue this. I have to go and do this thing. It's just that's what the universe is telling me. All of the stars are aligning and saying, this is what you have to go and do. And I was like, I can't afford the show's not at a place where you've got this job at NASA. And he's like, dude, no, I understand. This is your baby. Go do your thing. And I was like, all right. And then, just a few, I guess just a couple months ago now, I was talking to him, and he was just not really feeling it. And I was like, well, come out here, we'll make it work somehow, and come out here, edit for me, because this is getting bigger and bigger, and it's becoming more than I can do on my own anymore. And there's so much more that I want to do with it. I just don't have the bandwidth. So I'm so happy to have Paul on board, because, he's like setting up the cameras and the lights and, shooting it and now editing it. So that's the backend help that I've always needed.
When you were shooting in the hack house, how were you able to fund that?
Well, I had a very unique opportunity, experience, something like that. For the last 10 years, I've been a sysadmin for a company back east, and about 5 years into it, they closed the branch office that I was working at. So I became a telecommuter. I was working from home. Now, I'm a hacker just like any other, and one of the things that I'm most keen on is automating tedious tasks. So a lot of tasks were automated, and I had time to do the show. And it's because of that that I had, I didn't need a capital investment to, I had a day job that I could keep going and at the same time do the show, and they didn't conflict, because I could set my own hours with my work and with Hack 5. So it kind of worked out.
It started as a sideline.
Exactly. And it basically took 5 years for Hack 5 to become my job. It's because I had that freedom, and I can't imagine how I could have done it otherwise. I mean, yeah.
We'll have more with Darren Ketchin right after this reminder. It's a reminder of the good work being done by St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. I know what you're thinking. Why are children doing research? It is, after all, St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. But no, actually, it's a lot of grown-ups doing research on diseases children have. And you can help. Go to their website. It's stjude.org. Then click on the donate button. It costs over $1 million a day to operate St. Jude's. But don't worry, I'm not asking you to give the whole amount. I'm just asking you to chip in. So go to stjude.org. I've also added St. Jude's to my Facebook page. After all, how could you not like St. Jude's? We're back with Darren Ketchin. So you moved to San Francisco and to the big time?
Yeah, well, hopefully. I mean, that's the idea. It's just taking this passion of mine, and, people have always said, do what you love, the money will come. Didn't believe it for forever, and now it's enough where I can get by, so I just want to keep doing it. It's really my passion. And
why San Francisco?
Why San Francisco?
Yeah.
Well, this is really where the industry is for podcasting. This is where our network partner is, Revision 3. And this is also where Twit is, another big podcast network. This is where CNET is. This is where tech is. To be honest here, I was talking about this just a few days ago. When I was little and so inspired about technology, I remember watching this show called The Site on MSNBC. And I was like, finally, like a show that speaks to me. And that was like with Soledad O'Brien. Funnily enough, Leo Laporte was actually on it, but he was a 3D animated character on it. And then later, I caught the tail end of the whole tech TV era, like way too late, like, 6 months before the G4 merger. But I just remember specifically like their intro with like the Transamerica building. And then I look back at like when I was little, like playing a flight simulator on my 486 and buzzing the what is it called, like Coit Tower and Sutro Tower and the Transamerica building, and then my mom being like, "Oh, do you know where that is?" I was like, "No clue. Just, you know, I'm flying an F-16 here or something." And she's like, "That's San Francisco." I was like, "Wow, this is a great place." And it's just so much of, and you know, it's also something like Web 2.0 is so San Francisco centralized, it kind of feels like sometimes, like, you know, things like Craigslist, we're like, "Oh, wow, that sounds so cool." And you hear about the podcasters talking about it, you read about it, and you're like, "Oh, San Francisco only," when these things come out. And so many of these new services come out that are San Francisco only to begin with, or things that, like, you know, just little things where it, you know, you go to a web form of like a Web 2.0 site and like it defaults your location to San Francisco until it knows your location. Cause it's like, well, obviously either in the Bay Area, right?
Well,
you're a hipster, right? And it's like, no, I'm not. So I don't know. All along when I was little, San Francisco was just kind of like this, you know, geek mecca. I mean, Silicon Valley is right here. So yeah. So, I mean, I'm not technically in the city proper. I'm in the East Bay, but yeah, the whole Bay Area is beautiful.
Yeah, well, you're closer to Berkeley than you are to anything else.
Yeah, I'm closer to Berkeley, yeah. And it's good stuff. There's great twisty roads and some of the most gorgeous highways you've ever seen here. I absolutely love riding here. It's the best.
For the last question, let me ask you, if you were giving high school graduation advice, kind of your own virtual speech, what would it be?
I don't know. I'm not big on speeches, but I will say that some of the lessons that I've learned are that you really need to, obviously follow your passion, but not wait for anyone's permission to go and do the things that you want to do. And to take those ideas that you have in your head that you're thinking, "Oh, this is such a great thing. It's going to be so great." Well, you have to do it like immediately, or at least write it down. You need to get it down and get it out there. The sooner the better, because sometimes those ideas, and these still happen to me with segments that I've, you know, that I've been waiting to do, they'll just sound so grandiose in your head. And you're just thinking about how perfect that they're going to be, but they're not. And you need to just do them and fail forward and just keep, you know, failing and progressing, because the more, like, I look back at my original shows, like my first couple of episodes, and it's like I can see the passion there, but the execution leaves a lot to be desired. There's so many like little flaws here and there that take a while to fix, but it's because I went ahead and actually did that first episode. So when I get an idea like that, you know, it's important to just get it out there and do it and refine it, and not think about how great it's going to be when you get around to it. Mm-hmm. And not wait around for somebody to give you permission to do it, because nobody's going to. It's too easy to just, you know, coast in life. And if you have ideas, you know, execute them and good things will happen.
It's important to start.
Yeah, absolutely. Put good out into the universe and see what comes back to you.
All right. Thanks, Darren. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Dr. Ken. It was a pleasure speaking with you.